Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion with Sean Stone. He is our cultural correspondent. He goes out and tells us what's happening in the region arts-wise on screens and on stages and in museums and different places. And it's always a nice way to check in and find out all of the cool things that are happening. Good morning, Sean Stone. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. I'm fine.
All right. Now, you have seen two films. Let us begin with Darkest Hour. This is the Winston Churchill biopic? I don't know.
Yeah.
With Gary Oldman.
Yeah, it starts from just before, just when Neville Chamberlain resigns. And
yes.
They're going to pick him, and it goes until he convinces them all that they have to go all in on the war. It's like a month or month and a half.
Okay.
Oldman is everything you would expect. He's fantastic. He really carries the movie. If you'd just seen the clips in the trailer out of context, they may not. Some of them didn't work for me, but in the context of the whole performance and the whole movie, he's fantastic. The director, a lot of overhead shots and fancy pants stuff that he thinks are profound and comes off as cheesy.
So let me ask you a question, because first of all, I didn't know how I was going to take this film because I had become so enamored with the John Lithgow performance of Churchill in The Crown on Netflix.
Ah.
Just thought that was lovely. So I didn't know how I would feel with Gary Oldman as Churchill. I agree with you. I thought he did an amazing job. Again, I'm going to go back. I'm going to sound like a broken record, and I apologize that I can't come up with any more insightful analysis other than this. But why does that movie just end?
You mean just stop?
Yeah.
I just think that, you know, he beats his nemesis. He beats Chamberlain, and he beats.
I didn't find it to be satisfying.
The Viscount Halifax.
Yes, I didn't find that to be satisfying.
Did
you? I mean, like, it just seemed like there was more there.
I didn't mind that so much. I just found so much of it was distracting.
Yes.
All those overhead shots.
Agreed.
You know, it's the equivalent of, you know, how, I don't mean to be mean, but how every Barry Manilow song would end with a modulation,
mm-hmm.
and it would be to hype it up. That's all these shots were. It was hype. It wasn't telling you any visual information.
I thought of it sort of it, and maybe this is a strange analogy, but I thought of it as sort of the optic equivalent of an Aaron Sorkin, like, Walk and Talk.
Like when you've seen the third one in the same episode?
Right.
It's like, all right.
Got it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. So that is Darkest Hour. I have not seen All the Money in the World. This is the movie that's interesting for many reasons, but what did you make of it?
I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah.
I didn't know what to expect. This is the movie in which they replaced Kevin Spacey with Christopher Plummer. Now, I had seen the original trailer with Kevin Spacey in the theater. It must have been like the 1 week that it was shown. And my first thought was, wow, Spacey is wearing a lot of prosthetics to look old. And it was distracting. So I think the replacement casting, just on its face, so to speak, improve the movie.
Not a bad thing.
Christopher
right.
Plummer is great. It's about Plummer plays J. Paul Getty. It's set in 1973 when his grandson J. Paul Getty III was kidnapped by some Italian rough guys, and it's Michelle Williams plays the mother, and Wahlberg is sort of a security operative. Mark Wahlberg. It's tense. It's really well constructed. It has all sorts of surprises. I mean, the only thing I remember, spoiler alert, from when I was a kid was that they cut his ear off.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's like, oh, yeah, the Getty kid with the ear, you know, but there's a lot of levels to it. And it's really tense right up until the end. It's Ridley Scott right on his game.
All the Money in the World. Okay, what's happening on area stages beginning tonight right across the street from our building?
At the Low Beat, it's Anders Parker and Cloud Badge. That's tonight at 8 o'clock. He's sort of a legendary folk psych rocker. They said, I remember one description was like, if it was country music dipped in LSD. So there you go.
It's a picture, doesn't
that
it?
That certainly does. And as we heard the intro music, the Slambovian Circus of Dreams, just sort of psychedelic folk indie rock, is going to be at Cafe Lena in Saratoga Springs Friday at 8 o'clock. Friday and Saturday, two shows, 7:30 and 9:30 at the Comedy Works, also in Saratoga Springs. Josh Gondelman, he is a writer and participant on the Last Week Tonight show, the John Oliver show.
Yes. Really?
So, yeah.
That's interesting.
So it's an interesting, you know, he's an interesting guy. And then on the main stage at Proctor's, Friday through Sunday, various times, check their website, Chicago the Musical, the Bob Fosse musical, as opposed to Chicago the Band, who also come to town
quite a bit. Yes.
You know, so you got to keep these things straight. Steamer Number 10 Theater in Albany will be putting on Cinderella Tales. This is a children's theater. It's Friday at 7 o'clock, Saturday and Sunday at 3 o'clock. The show runs weekends through January 15th. They take three versions of the Cinderella tale as it's been sort of transmuted around the world and turn them into something for the kids. Saturday night at the Egg in Albany, it's JMO's Jazz Band. That's at 8 o'clock. JMO is, of course, one of the two original drummers of the Allman Brothers Band.
And that's J-A-S-S-S-Z, right? S's?
Yes, I was. That's why I was sort of trying to...
Yes, I know you're doing
trying to add a little snake impression there. Exactly. And then Saturday and Sunday, Saturday night at 7:30 p.m., Sunday at 3 p.m. at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall, Albany Symphony Orchestra will be performing Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. And there's also a debut viola concerto featuring soloist Richard O'Neill. Always need another viola concerto. It's not a really big repertoire compared to the violin.
So increase it whenever you can.
Exactly.
That's on Saturday at 7:30 and Sunday at 3 at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall.
Right. And then Black Label Society will be at Upstate Concert Hall in Clifton Park Sunday night at 8 o'clock. That's Ozzy Osbourne's guitarist, Zakk Wylde. That's his heavy metal band. They've been around for 20 years. They're from L.A. There are a few new movies. I'm really looking forward to I, Tonya.
I, Tonya, the Margaret, what was her name? Margot Robbie. Thank you.
And Allison Janney.
Yes.
In an amazing, amazing hair appliance and glasses as her mother. The legendary Tonya Harding story.
It looks great. It's been getting great reviews, and I'm really looking forward to it.
I remember I was in Portland, Oregon once for a couple days, and I took the trolley out to the mall to see the rink where Tonya Harding practiced. It was around that time, so I figured I should make the pilgrimage.
Did they have a plaque or
anything? No, they don't have a plaque
on this site.
Not on this site, but I thought it was funny that they had a skating rink in a mall.
Well, yeah, whatever.
Back in those days. I mean, now they have, you know, they have everything at the mall. You know, they have spas and comedy clubs and, you know.
Large bowling alleys.
Yes, exactly.
All right, so that is I, Tonya, which will be starting up tomorrow. Then another film I'm very much looking forward to.
Molly's Game. Speaking of Aaron Sorkin.
That's right.
This is Jessica Chastain as a woman who runs some sort of gambling thing. So it'll be interesting to see. Have you read? There's a book.
I've not read the book, but I believe Sorkin wrote the screenplay, right?
And directed it. Yeah.
And it's his directorial debut. People have been wondering for a long time what that would be like.
Right.
Again, I've read nothing but good reviews on both his work as well as the film as a whole. And I very much enjoy the work of Jessica Chastain, but I really, really, I know there are reasons not to like Aaron Sorkin. I know. And I have realized them at various points, but I do enjoy his work.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that when he goes off the rails, he just...
Oh, goes off the rails.
He's gone.
Yeah.
He's gone. But this doesn't look like that kind of thing.
No. Well, yeah. I think film is good for him because his attention span isn't great. The Newsroom was a great series, but he lost interest about, I don't know, maybe in the eighth episode. So we got the next season then was truncated. And then the last one, I think there were like four episodes, and then they just killed everybody off, and that was done. Movies are perfect for him.
Yeah. So you can go on to the next thing.
Right. Tell a story. Give him a little time to recoup and then go ahead.
Yeah. And then there's also a horror movie opening, Insidious, The Last Key. Apparently, this is a series of movies. If you know about it, you're probably going to go see it. If you're like me, you don't know about it. It's just one of those things that's been going on and making money and without my interest at all. Now, I did want to ask you quickly, since I didn't get to talk to you last week, what were your reservations about Star Wars?
I felt it was manipulative. I thought they were going after many sectors of the fan base, and I don't know that always worked for me. To be as frank as I possibly can, I thought it was a little boring. I found myself not nodding off exactly, but just sort of my mind wandering about. When you start noticing the Art Deco ceiling in the theater as opposed to the the fighter ships blowing up, maybe that's a problem. And I just found that the connection there. I've heard this many, many times from many different people about the different generations of Star Wars fans. And I, of course, from that original generation of seeing the film in the theater when it first came out. And so I find myself, enjoying those moments when all of those familiar aspects are on the screen. Although with that said, the last movie I greatly enjoyed, and I thought all of the that characterization was right on the nose and was very fulfilling in bringing new aspects to the story, and I was excited by that, and I thought that was kind of lost in this film.
I thought Mark Hamill was fantastic.
Absolutely.
The main thing I took away from it is, boy, they painted themselves into a corner.
Well, right.
Because they set it all up to have Carrie Fisher sort of carry the third movie, and they've closed off all these avenues. They cut off all sorts of things that were supposed to be interesting from the last movie, and you're like, okay, smart guys, what are you gonna do now?
Yeah, and it seemed to me, don't you think they could have dealt with it? Well, they had time to deal with it in this movie.
Yes, they did, and they didn't.
And they didn't. And I guess maybe that's a marketing decision. I don't know. I just thought it was a little odd.
Yes, but, I will agree.
With that said, individual performances: Laura Dern, fantastic. Mark Hamill, I agree with you, fantastic. Carrie Fisher, fantastic. I know people have been throwing shade on Adam Driver. I thought he was terrific. But there you go.
Like I said, he's just got to be fully evil next time. That's enough emo.
No, half evil.
Just start killing people.
All right. Sean Stone is our cultural correspondent. You can see his list on our website, wamc.org. We'll talk next week.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.